I'm just so pleased we get to jump into part one of a four-part series that is called True Wealth. And I have the honor of preaching each of these four weekends in this January series. So let's jump in by talking about this guy right here. This guy on the right-hand side, his name's John Cortinas. That's his wife, Megan, and their brood of kids. And I met John for the first time. We were in Colorado Springs. It was like 10 years ago, and it was a conference that we were both speaking at, and I bumped into him several times over the years. So something you need to know about John is the dude works really, really hard. I mean, at high school, I think it was in Texas, he mowed lawns in the suffocating heat all summer long. When the dude was 17 years old, he had $10,000 in the bank through mowing lawns. And I know some of you are going, wow, and some of you are going, I already don't like him. No, if you met him, no, I don't need to meet him. I don't want to meet him. Okay, that was just the beginning. He graduates from high school, goes to college, worked his tail off in college in order to be highly recruited into a six-figure job position when he was like 22 years old. College graduate. He and Megan marry early, and when they were, you think, oh my goodness, they must have had just a great lifestyle. No, they weren't spenders, they were savers. And by the time they were 24, they had amassed an astounding level of savings. But in addition to that, when they're like 24, they're tithing. Tithing is the life discipline of living on like 90% of your income so that 10% can be given away. It's like 24-year-olds are giving away 10% of their income. And so just John and Megan, they would like be the poster children for Christian financial responsibility. I mean, work hard, studiously avoid debt, save, give 10% of your income away. And then John writes about what was really going on. He co-authored this book. It's called True Wealth. That's our title, True Riches. I wouldn't begin to steal his title, True Riches. True Wealth is ours. And by the way, I'm stealing his outline too. But the sermons are mine. All right. Subtitle, What Jesus Really Said About Money and Your Heart. And so this is what John writes in his book. He says, because we consistently gave away 10% of our income, our relatives, friends, and even our church viewed us as financially mature Christians. And then he drops this, but this was not necessarily true. And John begins to talk about the undercurrents, what was actually going on in his heart during this season where they were doing all the right things. And the undercurrents of his heart looked something like this. There was arrogance, just self-superior pride, greed, constant grasping for more. Believe it or not, there was financial anxiety, worry about the future financially, and total indifference about the needs of the world. As John self-diagnosed, he said, I just didn't care about needs going on in the world. Now, that right there troubles me greatly. It troubles me because I have spent so many years doing the right stuff, studiously avoiding debt, setting up an emergency fund. So when something breaks down at our house, like a hot water heater a couple months ago, the money's there to take care of it. Stashing money away in a retirement fund, giving consistently to our church, and an additional amount at Christmas time. The right stuff. And I've just realized it's possible to do the right stuff with a wrong heart. It's possible to do the right stuff with a wrong heart. And so the question that John is after in True Riches is the question, what is the kind of heart that the crucified, resurrected Jesus desires to form in us? And it looks something like this. A heart marked by gratitude, contentment, trust, and loving generosity. And by the way, those traits push out the other ones. A heart of gratitude pushes out pride. Contentment pushes out greed. Trust pushes out anxiety. and a generous love pushes out indifference to the needs around us. And by the way, that little image there, that's the outline for our series. Today, we talk about gratitude. Next weekend, probably the most challenging message for our culture is the one on contentment. Then we're going to talk about fear, financial fear and trust. And we're talking about indifference and how generous love is intended to push that out. That is the outline for our series. And I would just ask you in week one, just right now, wherever, whatever space you're sitting in, just to open your heart, just to soften your heart, just kind of a posture saying, okay, God, here I am. Just help me to hear whatever you want me to hear today. As we have this critical, foundational conversation about gratitude and why it is so foundational and why it is so pivotal to all the other areas in heart transformation. Our conversation today, we're going to have a three-part conversation. And part number one, we're just calling Leaving the Desert. Part number one, Leaving the Desert. And we're going to explore a story that is like one of the earliest stories in our Bible. And so hundreds and hundreds of years before the time of Jesus. So I want you to travel with me. I want you to travel with me here, off to the left of that red dot. That red dot is in what's called the Sinai Peninsula or the Sinai Desert. Off to the left, off to the west, is Egypt. And the Israelites, they have been in slavery in Egypt for generations. Generations of slavery as a people group. It was awful. It was horrible. It was demeaning. It was depressive. It crushed the life out of you. Generations of slavery. And then the Creator sends a deliverer by the name of Moses to rescue these people from slavery in Egypt. They leave slavery. They leave Egypt and they go out into the desert area. And there they have a detour for 40 years. But the story of the desert is the story of God's provision in the desert. I mean, one time, there's like no water. And in the story, one of the stories is told is that God provides them water from a rock, a boulder. Water from a rock is like water from nowhere. Water from a rock is like water from nothing. And then God provides this food substance by the name was called manna, these little flakes that would appear on the ground, and they'd make this bread out of it or this porridge out of it. So God provides water, God provides food. He provides for them in the desert. But we got to understand something. As we open our Bibles today to Deuteronomy chapter 8, they are about to leave the desert. After the 40-year detour, after the generations in slavery, they are about to go toward the land of promise. And so just look at this next image here. This is about what they're ready to walk into. My friends, this is what you would call a major upgrade. As they prepare to go, and by the way, the land of promise, sometimes it was called the land flowing with milk and honey, and they are ready. They can taste it as they're ready to leave the desert. They're already dreaming about the sweet honey, the juicy grapes, the tangy pomegranates, and they're going to leave the desert, and they're going to go into this land of plenty, and they're going to farm, and their herds are going to grow from 2 sheep to 4 to 8, maybe even enough crops to sell some and to have some silver or some gold. They're going to move into real houses, and now they receive a warning as they prepare to leave the desert. See, there was the real possibility that they were going to leave the desert, get into real houses, flocks and herds increasing, and to sit down at a wonderful meal of plenty, of prosperity, and say, you know, I think I did this. The insinuation without God's help. It's almost like, so who got you here? I think I got me here. Moses, their leader, throws down this huge warning. He begins by saying, listen, when you get into the land, when you eat, when you're satisfied, praise the Lord your God, the one who got you out of Egypt, the one who got you out of the land of slavery. And here's the warning, Deuteronomy 8, verse 12. Otherwise, Check out the words, when you eat and are satisfied, and then when you build fine houses, and then, man, you get settled down, when your herds and your flocks grow large, and your silver and gold increase, and all that you have is multiplied, check this out, then your heart will become proud. Listen, you might forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. And then he goes on this riff where Moses just reminds them of all that God did for them in the desert. He says, he led you through the vast and dreadful wilderness. He brought you water out of a hard rock. He gave you manna to eat in the wilderness. And then after providing for you and getting you through this awful space, you're going to build this house, you're going to sit down, you're going to have dinner, and you're going to go, you know, I think I did this. It's in verse 17 where he says, you may say to yourself, my power and the strength of my hands have produced this wealth for me. I did this. And remember those three expressions again, the three expressions. He led, he brought, he gave. And he says, you will forget God who got you here. You'll forget the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt. So you know my strength, the power of my hands. I think I did this without you. Now, question, why would they think that? I did this. Who got you here? I got me here. Why would they think this? They would think this because their labor had a lot to do with it. I mean, think about it. A family sits down to dinner and they're eating bread and they go, no. We planted this grain and we harvested this grain and we milled this grain into flour, and we baked this bread. We did this. Who got you here? We got us here. And if you're able to dip this warm bread into olive oil, where did that olive oil come from? It came from our olive tree. And we picked those olives and crushed those olives into olive oil. We did this. And if you have a glass of wine at dinner, you go, yeah, and that came from our vineyard, vines that we pruned. We did this. My power, the strength of my hands. And so I toyed with this a little bit. I wondered, what would this look like if it was written to us today? Because this is written to an agricultural society, and so it says when your flocks and herds increase, and when your gold and silver are multiplied. And I just go, okay, Jeff, what would this look like if this were written today? And it might look like something like this. When your children and grandchildren are adequately fed and clothed. When you get a job and are earning an income and you're able to move into your own apartment or buy a house in a safe neighborhood. When you're able to drive a reliable car or truck. When you are able to go out to dinner at a frequency that would baffle my Depression-era grandparents. And maybe even you go, you know, as your mortgage is shrinking and as your savings are growing, right then, warning, 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 because the temptation is to go, you know, who got you here? I got me here. And the reason we think that is because we had so much to do with it. It's like, dude, I set up that interview, and I sufficiently impressed an employer to hire me, and when I go to work, I actually work at work. And I set an alarm clock, and I show up on time. And you say, no, I earned that degree. Or, dude, I did it without a stinking degree. I started at the lowest level in the company and worked my way into management through working hard. I got my real estate license. I graduated from nursing school. We purchased that home. So who got you here? I got me here. The danger of I got me here, it's my strength, the power of my hands, is that it can erase the generous activity of God who provides people and opportunity along the way. I did this can easily morph into an arrogance that goes, I did this without you. And so part two of the conversation is we go back to this Deuteronomy 8 warning. Part two of the conversation is just a reality check. Okay, a reality check. And that's why this warning began with those words, when you have two things, when you have eaten and are satisfied, praise the Lord your God for the good land he has given you. And then down in verse 18, I love this. This is so powerful. It says, verse 18, but remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. Now, please play along. Wherever you are, I'm going to ask for us to just kind of read that quietly together. Ready from the top. But remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. Now, this opens up a completely different category. What if my work ethic is a gift from him? What if my mind and my hands and my skill is a gift from him? What if my discipline and my determination is a gift from him? Now, it's important for me to mention this to the fine people of Ada Bible Church because I have the ability to travel from campus to campus when I am not speaking here at Cascade, and I have detected that we have a whole lot of overachievers in this congregation. And a whole lot of you who wouldn't consider yourself to be overachievers, but you get up, you go to work, and you get it done. And so it is he who gives you the ability to produce wealth. This might come as a new thought to you. What if my very determination, devotion, dedication, and opportunities are a gift from God? So as I was been preparing for this, a book that I've been reading through that I just love, it's on gratitude, and the title is Gratitude, written by a local man. Some of you know Neil. It's written by Cornelius Plantinga, who's the president of Calvin Seminary, super smart guy, written a bunch of stuff. Listen to what he says here. He was reflecting on 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7. 1 Corinthians 4:7, where the Apostle Paul says, ask this question, what do you have that you did not receive? So this is a question that Neil was working over. What do you have that you did not receive? His gut reaction, he says, the question makes me defensive. Haven't I worked hard for my success? Hasn't my effort achieved good things? How about my determination and my sense of purpose? But then I have to admit that the energy for my hard work came from God. And the motive to do it from my parents and teachers. And finally, this line that I love where he goes, I'm not entirely sure where my determination and sense of purpose come from, but I'm pretty sure I didn't invent them. So here he goes, man, even my discipline and my sense of purpose and my work ethic, even that he has to attribute to others and to the good hand of God. By others, he specifically mentions parents and teachers that infused some things in him. So I'm going to show you a picture, and I want you just quick to say, okay, who are the two guys in the picture, and where is it? Ready? Here we go. This is Orville and Wilbur Wright, and the place is near, it's called Kill Devil Hills, but it's near Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, where in December of 1903, they did something that had never been done successfully, got an airplane in the air. A heavier-than-air aircraft into the air, self-propelled and self-powered. That day in December, it flew like for 12 seconds. I think like 120 feet. But they did something that had two guys from Dayton, Ohio, who ran a bicycle shop, invent the airplane. Genius and a mountain of hard work. Let me show you a picture of Wilbur. This is Wilbur here. You say he looks like a serious man. He's a very serious man. And he, in David McCullough's biography on the Wright brothers, he had this quote that I absolutely love, where Wilbur says, you know, if I had to give a young man advice on how to succeed, this is what I'd say. So here we go. If I were giving young man advice as how he might succeed in life, I would say to him, pick out a good father and mother and begin life in Ohio. Pick out a good mom and dad. This is something over which you have no control, the family that you enter. You see, by the way, not relevant, but his dad was a preacher. His dad was a pastor. And his parents, they let the kids tinker. They encourage their creativity. They let them rip stuff apart to see how it was made and then try to put it back together. They had parents that nurtured their creativity. And here is Wilbur Wright, who had worked his tail off going, man, there's stuff I can't take credit for. The fact that I got that mom and dad, and the fact that I got to start in, you know, the heartland of America in Ohio and explore there and build there, he says, yeah, there's just stuff I can't take credit for. Pick out a good mom and dad and begin life in Ohio. Chris and I, our first weekend at Ada Bible Church, we were 21. I had yet to begin in the fall my fourth year of Bible college, and somehow you begin, and so the December of my fourth year of Bible college was asked to become the pastor of Ada Bible Church. It's 21 years old. Who in the world does that? I'll tell you who. My parents did it. My dad was 21 and my mom was 20 when they moved to a little potato-growing community in the southeast corner of Idaho and started their first church. I thought it was normal to be a pastor when you were 21. It wasn't. And I grew up in a family where I thought ministry was always fun all the time. I've tempered that slightly since then. But where ministry was a joy. Even when you're super young, man, you just jump in. I had the perfect parents for the calling that I was going to receive from God. I hope to think that I've worked hard and steadily and faithfully over the years. There's just stuff I can't take credit for. And so gratitude always has a double object. I can be thankful to my mom and dad, but I need to be thankful to God who gave me that mom and dad, higher up and farther back. I give thanks to God. So what I'm trying to say here in this reality check, for it is God who gives you the ability to produce wealth, is just gratitude grows when we recognize that other people and opportunities are involved in it. It's not just me. I don't want to melt this down to its simplest form, which for me would be the delight of a rich cup of coffee in the morning. Now, I work, I'm paid, and I buy stuff. I buy stuff with money. So I can hold this cup of coffee at a coffee shop and go, I did this, I worked and I bought this. And yet if you're thinking, well, you go, yeah, you did it sort of, Jeff, but I'm guessing you didn't grow the coffee beans. You probably didn't do that. Probably someone in, I don't know, Kenya or Guatemala did that. I'm thinking you didn't dry the coffee beans, roast the coffee beans, or ship the coffee beans to West Michigan. And if you're on one side of the counter receiving this wonderful, rich, delicious cup of coffee, there's probably a server on the other side that brewed this coffee. And listen, and higher up and farther back, there was the generous, creative heart of God who whispered, let there be coffee. And he did this because he loves us very much. And so as I receive a cup of coffee, I can express, thank you to the gracious barista on the other side of the counter. But higher up, and farther back, there's the Creator who sends sunshine and rain and provides fertile soil to make this happen. Higher up and farther back, a thank you is in order. I did this. Well, yeah, not really. I bought it. But there's just the good hand of God and the good hand of others in the process. So let me switch metaphors here. It's a cold winter day. Cold winter day. I mean, it's 14 degrees. You bundle up in your winter clothes, hat, gloves, and you find an area, nature trail. You pull into the parking lot, and it's frigid out there, and yet you hike this 3-mile circuit around this nature trail, come back to your car, and there should be a sense of accomplishment, satisfaction, that you got outside on a cold day and hiked this loop. It's good for your spirit, it's good for your health, and you go, shoo, awesome, I did this. But as I sit there in the parking lot, I go, yeah, but there's probably some things I didn't do. I didn't donate the land for the park. Someone else did that a long time ago. I wasn't part of the committee that mapped out the hiking trails. I didn't plant the signs at trail intersections to give directions to directionally challenged hikers. And I wasn't the one that plowed the parking lot this morning. I can be thankful to other people that I've never even met for their work that enriches my life. And now higher up and farther back, I can give thanks to the Creator who out of his creative, generous heart desired for there to be plants and trees and wildlife. And then hiking this trail, something in him touches something in me. One who is created is enjoying the Creator. All I'm saying here is a thank you is in order. You got it? No? Okay, one more illustration. A house. You move into the cutest little place. And in this housing economy, this is an achievement. Make no mistake about it, it's an achievement. Have a deep sense of satisfaction for all of the hoops that you jumped through. I mean, securing the down payment money, securing a loan, presenting an offer that was accepted, having the inspections done, closing on the house and moving in. As you pull into the driveway, have a deep sense of satisfaction over what you have done for this to happen. And yet, gratitude for people other than yourself. I mean, I'm just guessing. If you moved into a pre-existing home, I'm just guessing you didn't run the power lines up and down the street. Just my guess. And I'm guessing that there were framers, drywallers, plumbers, and electricians that worked on this house that you now enjoy. And I know that we've got like, there's got to be 3 or 4 people today sitting somewhere going, Jeff, you don't understand. I really built my house. I mean, I built it all on my own. Okay, even then, if you're blessed with do-it-yourself superpowers, even then, I'm guessing you didn't make the paint. I'm guessing you didn't fabricate the drywall. I'm guessing you didn't laminate the plywood. And this is a guess, but I'm just thinking that you weren't the one that invented the skill saw. Again, gratitude to people we've never met that whose work enriched, invention enriched our lives. And higher up and farther back, there is a thank you to the Creator who, with the beginning of time, made order out of chaos. And then makes men and women in his image with this capacity to design and build, part of his image. And those stud walls, those 2x4s, come from a renewable resource called lumber. Trees, part of his good creation. Higher up and farther back, I go, every good gift. God is the originator of every good gift I enjoy. And so right now, some of you are going like, Jeff, okay, we got it, we got it. What you want us to do is be grateful more often. No. No, it's way harder than that. You see, because there's a difference between expressing gratitude more frequently and actually becoming a grateful person, where gratitude becomes part of your disposition, reflexive muscle memory, where it almost feels automatic to be grateful. There's a huge difference between expressing gratitude frequently and becoming a grateful person. Becoming a grateful person, that is heart transformation, and it takes time. In addition to time, it takes practice, Practice. Practice. Part three of our conversation, the habits of gratitude. The habits of gratitude. Now, when I'm talking about the habits of gratitude, I'm talking about day-to-day things you actually do that can begin to bend your heart in the direction of gratitude and away from arrogant self-superiority. There are things you can actually do. And honestly, I could probably point to 10 or a dozen different behaviors that would help you grow in becoming a grateful person, having a grateful disposition. I've selected two. So you have two homework assignments, all right? Two habits that I would love for you to embrace. Habit number one is just called three daily gratitudes. And I would love for you to give this a shot for 28 consecutive days. That's your homework assignment. 28 consecutive days, 4 weeks of every day writing down three things that you're grateful to the Lord for that day. Now, when I do my daily gratitudes, sometimes it's food. It really is. That I got a pizza place 2 miles from my house, or the salmon that Chris made. A lot of times it's a specific food item. A lot of times it's something in nature, waking up to a winter wonderland postcard morning where everything is blanketed in white and snow layered on the tree branches. The God who creates seasons, sometimes it's something in nature. Sometimes it's another human being. In my gratitude list, I give thanks for a life-giving meeting because I get to work with a life-giving person that has entered my life. So by specific, I mean, don't write down, okay, my house, my kids, my car, my house, my kids, my car, my house, my kids, my job, my car, you know, but something very, very specific. Now, some of you are going, yeah, Jeff, yeah, you've talked about this before. I have, and we'll talk about it again, because it is one of the disciplines, one of the habits that I've embraced that helps bend my heart in the direction of being a grateful person. But often in the past, I said, you know, I don't know when I started this practice, and I got tired of saying that. So I went down to my basement to a box of old journals where I just tossed them. They were not organized according to date or year, so I put them all in chronological order. And I thought, Jeff, when did you begin this practice of three gratitudes a day? So I started with earlier, okay, it's not there, it's not there, it's not there, it's not there, it's not there. Oh, that's when I started it. And the date, mid-March 2013, which means a dozen years. A dozen years, three items a day, three items a day, three items a day. Would you like to see what that looks like? It looks like that. Now, I was going to bring them in and plop them down, but I thought, a little too dramatic. Thousands and thousands. Just three items a day, three items a day, three items a day, three items a day. When I say I began this discipline 12 years ago, what that means is I'm 62. I didn't start that till I was 50. I started that discipline when I was 50, that habit, because I began to detect attitudes in my own spirit that were profoundly ungrateful. And it was just this reality check moment where I don't want to become an ungrateful old guy. So day after day after day after day, just reaching for three items and saying, gracious God, thank you for that, and thank you for that, and thank you for that. Listen, I'm telling you, it will change your heart in only 3 to 5 years. No, actually, you could begin to see your heart move in only 3 to 4 weeks. But if you want ongoing effect, I'd encourage you to maybe make it a lifetime deal, but give me 28 days. 28 days, three items a day. You might detect visible growth in your spirit in 28 days. That's homework assignment number one. Habit number two is just restore mealtime prayer. Mealtime prayer, what that does is it gives me, if you eat, I'm assuming most of you do, it gives you an opportunity before a meal just saying, okay, I just want to acknowledge in this moment, I know where my stuff comes from, and God is the giver of all good gifts. He gives me a natural time to do that during the day. So restore, mealtime, prayer. Dude's driving down the road. He's hungry. And he's driving from appointment to appointment to appointment. And he's got like 20 minutes before his next appointment, and he's hungry. And ahead, he sees a sign as if from above, a sign that brings light to his eyes and joy to his heart. Jimmy John's. Pulls the car in, retrieves the sandwich, snags a table, and as he unwraps his sandwich and takes the first bite, just that moment after, during the first bite of just being able to, thank you for ham and provolone cheese and lettuce and tomato. Thank you for freshly baked bread. And thank you for that dude over there who made this freaky fast. It's just this moment as you enjoy the bite of a sandwich, you'll say, I know where my stuff comes from. You are the giver. Higher up and farther back, you are the giver of all good gifts. Now, I think this is a helpful practice for anybody. I think it's more important for parents with young kids. Because in addition to your heart saying, hey, okay, I know where my stuff comes from, and you are the giver of all good gifts, it can begin to train a youngster and move a youngster's heart in this heart habit of gratitude. I know where my stuff comes from. All good gifts come from above. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, Jeff, you do not understand the chaos of our dining experiences. I don't know when you last had children, but you are probably way out of touch with what it's like. Jeff, by the time I get their plates out, you know, the three preschoolers, we don't even start dinner at the same time. You're out of touch, aren't you? Yes, I am. But graciously, God has provided these wonderful munchkins called grandchildren, and they have reacquainted me with the chaos. And so number one, don't wait for that Norman Rockwell moment where everybody's gathered around and quiet and there's the turkey. Embrace the chaos. We had a sleepover not long ago. Three of our grandchildren were there. I was the chef that morning and I was taking orders. Okay, pancake, yeah, but no egg. Okay. Egg, but no pancake. One egg, one pancake, but do not put the syrup on the plate. I don't want it touching anything. Syrup in a bowl to the side for dipping purposes. And off to the races they go, and then I'm over making my pancakes. By the time I'm sitting down, they're half done. No, offer thanks in the middle of the meal. And we did. Thank you, Jesus. For pancakes and eggs and bacon. Thank you, Jesus, that we got to wake up this morning with grandchildren in our house. And thank you that their parents will be here to collect them in 1 hour and 47 minutes. Keep it simple. Keep it simple. Listen, dudes, specifically, I know some of you are going like, you know, Jeff, I keep hearing I'm supposed to be a spiritual leader in my home. I just don't have a clue what that looks like. Start here and keep it simple. Keep it simple. For the bounty we are about to receive from my hand. No. Just Jesus, thank you for macaroni and cheese. Keep it simple. Thank you for macaroni and cheese. And thank you for, higher up and farther back, wheat that grows. And with rain and sunshine, and people take that wheat and people somewhere make macaroni, thank you for them. From an early age, kids can get the impression God is the giver of all good gifts. We know where our stuff comes from. And right about now, some of you are like wildly disappointed. Jeff, you don't get it, man. We've been through a season of unemployment. We have never been in a more financially desperate situation. Or we can't get our spending under control, and credit card debt is out of control. And here you are, be thankful for three items a day. Write them down and offer grace at dinner. Come on, man. Jeff, this can't be that important. It is. Because gratitude is the foundation for all these other things. See gratitude as the foundation for the other three. Gratitude is the foundation for contentment. Only gratitude can turn what I have into enough. And when I'm realizing how bombarded I am by the blessing of God, it can help move my heart away from anxiety and toward a trust that my Father in heaven cares about me. When I realize that I have a tsunami of blessings entering my life, I may desire to be a conduit of God's blessing through generosity. Gratitude is foundational to the other three, to contentment, to trust, and to generosity. Start here. I know where my stuff comes from. God is the giver of every good gift. Higher up and farther back, He is the giver. This is the foundation for all the others. All I've been really trying to say is this today and in this series. Let's go back to the gray heart. That if my heart is consumed with pride, greed, anxiety, and indifference, I am quite poor, even if I have a lot of money. And when my gracious Lord transforms my heart, and gratitude, contentment, trust, and generosity have invaded that space, you, my friend, are quite rich, even when you feel broke. This is true wealth. And I gotta have you back next week. Next week, this deal on contentment. Man, I think for our culture, this is one of the most critical conversations we can have. True wealth, part two, next week. Need you back. Let me ask you to stand here, and those of you gathered in other spaces, let me ask you to stand as well. And once again, we ask, gracious God, continue to reform our hearts, transform us, renew us. Gracious God, form us into the people you created us to be. We ask this in the name of Jesus, who generously came for us. Amen. We'll see you next week.